Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and discuss the continued uncertainty about financial stability in the Eurozone and the European Central Bank's ability to weather the accumulating debt burden of Greece, Ireland, Portugal, Spain, and Italy. William K. Black, the former litigation director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, who investigated the savings and loan disasters of the 1980s, joins us to assess the exposure of German banks and how much they are hiding bad loans. Then we'll talk with Jared Bernstein, who up until recently was Vice President Biden's chief economist and economic advisor and a member of President Obama's economic team. We will discuss how much the recent austerity measures resulting from the debt ceiling deal will hurt the economy and adversely affect President Obama's re-election chances. Then we will look into the possibility of growing economic distress in the United States, sparking riots similar to the recent outbreaks of arson and looting in the United Kingdom. Darnell Hunt, professor of sociology at UCLA and author of Black Los Angeles, American Dreams and Racial Realities, joins us to gauge the level of despair amongst America's youth facing dwindling job opportunities and whether that might lead to violence in the future. Joining us now is William K. Black, who is the former litigation director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, who investigated the savings and loans disaster of the 1980s. Currently, he is a professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He was the executive director of the Institute for Fraud Prevention from 2005 to 2007, and he's the author of the best-selling book, The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Black.
Thank you for having me.
And you've been looking at the Eurozone lately, and it's interesting. Some time back, Bill, I talked with Joe Stiglitz, the Nobel laureate, maybe a year or two ago, and there was a concern then that what would perhaps bring down or unravel the Eurozone was the Euro debts in the eastern countries, like the Ukraine and Hungary, etc. And what's so interesting and ironic now is that it's not an east-west divide that's hurting the Eurozone, but a north-south divide.
Yes. In fairness to economists who get so much wrong, many of them actually got right even before the euro was created. They said, this is a really bad idea. The economies are far too different that you're putting together. And you're going to have a big recession someday, and it's going to be much more severe in the periphery than it is in the core nations. The core nations, which are, of course, Germany and France, completely control the European Central Bank, and they're going to want policies that will be terrible for the periphery. And by God, that's pretty much exactly what ended up happening. So you have the South in terrible crises. And, well, what are the three ways that you're supposed to respond and get yourself out of a great recession? One is devalue. Well, you can't devalue the currency. You're part of the euro. A second is to have much easier monetary policies, but the European Central Bank determines that, and France and Germany control it, and they don't want those policies. So you can't do that. And the third way is to have a significant anti-cyclical or counter-cyclical fiscal package, a stimulus package. But you're not permitted to do that under the badly named, oxymoronic, in fact, Growth and Stability Pact that the EU nations had to enter into if they were going to be part of the euro. And that means what you get instead is insane IMF, International Monetary Fund, style austerity, which makes the recession ever greater.
Well, we're borrowing on that model here, aren't we? I mean, that's what they just did in Washington.
Yes,
with that ridiculous debt ceiling deal. And let me ask you this, Bill Black. Do you think that the drop on the stock exchange here in the United States reflected the fact that $2 trillion were taken out of a sick economy and that Wall Street's in fact repudiating the deal that Obama and the Republicans made? Or is it the because of the downgrade of the S&P?
No, in fact, the downgrade of the S&P proves the same type of thing. You're quite right. The markets are saying this is insane. This is a pro-cyclical. That means it makes the cycle worse. it amplifies the cycle, which is to say it makes the Great Recession worse. We have a Great Recession because you have insufficient private sector demand. You have insufficient private sector demand because 10 million people lost their jobs, and a whole lot of people were frightened that if they got sick, they'd lose their houses and such, and so they cut back on spending. This is what is called the paradox of thrift, that we respond rationally to recession by tightening our belts, which makes the recession even worse. So the only thing that can work and actually bring the economy back to recovery, and by the way, reduce the deficits ultimately, is to run a deficit. In other words, to have a counter-cyclical policy, which is the thing we most learned from the Great Depression, we had thought. Instead, these yahoos decided we should make the recession worse by having budget cutbacks in a time where we're barely recovering from a recession. Now, S&P, Standard & Poor's, in downgrading the United States, was saying it is riskier than we thought to hold or buy bonds issued by the government. Well, the market repudiated that immediately because the price of bonds has gone up. In other words, the price and interest rates go in the opposite direction for bonds, especially long-term bonds. And that means people are charging a lower interest rate to be willing to loan money to the federal government after Standard & Poor's said it was riskier to loan. And the interest rates, of course, should have gone in the opposite direction if Standard & Poor's were correct. And so the markets have repudiated both the Republican/Tea Party movement of pro-cyclical, increase the recession vote, and the markets have repudiated Standard & Poor's, the morons that helped bring you the Great Recession and are now trying to create the Great Collapse on top of the Great Recession.
Again, I'm speaking with William K. Black, who's a professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. And what would their motive be? I want to get back to Europe, but I'm just curious to know what...
The greatest PR thing in history. What is everybody in the world talking about? Standard & Poor's. They have generated billions of dollars of publicity for themselves. And to put these two crises together, the United States is not like a member of the euro. We have our own sovereign currency. Greece does not. Warren Mosler famously says, because we're afraid of becoming the next Greece, we're turning ourselves into the next Japan. In other words, the lost two decades of growth. When you have a sovereign currency, you cannot be forced to default. You always have the capacity to repay your debts. And think of this vote again on the budget ceiling. Because you had Republicans and Tea Parties threatening to vote to default on the U.S. debt. Now tell me, what moral reason is there for the United States to refuse to pay its debts when it has every ability to pay its debts? Isn't this the party of morality? And worse than that, in many ways, or at least even worse because of it, is this is a gratuitous grenade thrown into your own financial house. Why would you do that? That is utterly insane. Anybody that cared about the nation would never follow these tactics. And of course, it is financial terrorism.
Well, Bill Black, I wish the president was saying what you've said. You've given a very clear case of what they've done, and by the way, the American people seem to agree. 82% in a recent poll said that they felt that the Congress and the president were heading in the wrong direction. And the reason I bundle the president and the Congress together in this catastrophe is that even though John Boehner crowed after this deal that we got 92% of what we wanted, 98% of what we wanted. You know, the president is joined at the hip in this lousy deal. He didn't distance himself from the deal and from these people that you've just explained how irresponsible and reckless they've been. So, you know, I mean, there's no point in complaining about the lack of a narrative from the White House, but, you know, it's getting to a point where their inability to make a case is looking to be suicidal.
Five generations of political scientists are going to marvel at the utter dishonesty and incompetence of the Obama administration in all of this. This is falling for Blazing Saddles style negotiation. I don't know if you remember the actor Cleveland Little is playing the African-American sheriff, and he's surrounded by the lynch mob. He takes out his gun, and he points it at his own head and says, "Don't move or I'll shoot." And that's what the Republicans have done. Had they caused a default, the Republican Party would have ceased to exist, because it would have caused a global calamity, and everyone would have known it was caused by the Republicans, which is why there was no chance that the Republicans were actually going to pull the trigger, because the gun was pointed at their own heads. And Obama has fallen for this time after time, and the Republicans, of course, know it.
But so what should he have done, though? Because I want to be clear about that.
He should have. Well, first, he should have simply used his 14th Amendment duties and responsibilities to pay the debts of the United States of America and announce that we were going to pay the debts and proceed to do so, which he could have done through normal Federal Reserve mechanisms. So he should have basically stared them down high noon, gone ahead, fixed it so that we paid our debts and leave them to sputter.
Well, it's extraordinary that not only did he not take the 14th Amendment option, he took it off the table and early in the negotiations.
Yeah, again, generations of people will marvel at you. If you took how to negotiate successfully and you put a negative sign and did the, in other words, did the opposite of everything that we ever teach anyone, you would have the Obama strategy. And okay, so he's never read negotiation theory. Everybody growing up, and bluntly, every male growing up, learns what you have to do to deal with bullies. And if you give in to bullies, what happens? They will bully you constantly. And the Republicans are the bullies, the thugs. And Obama is cringing and giving them everything they want. And so he's not only losing substantively, he has diminished himself as a political leader to the level of a child.
Again, I'm speaking with William K. Black, who's a former litigation director for the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, who investigated the savings and loans disasters of the 1980s and was responsible for putting hundreds of crooked bankers in jail. He is now professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. We're actually talking about what's going on in the United States here in terms of this ridiculous deal that's blown up in their face and been repudiated by Wall Street. However, we did start out talking about the euro, and I'd like to get back to it, only because I'm so depressed about what we're talking about. Not that the news is any better in Europe. So just to go back to Germany and France's role in the eurozone, and of course the French banks are now showing strains. My understanding is what's effectively happened here is that the Germans issued an insurance policy and now they're not going to pay out on it. Is that what's happening?
Well, I think the Germans will pay out on it. I think that, again, the Germans are a little better at negotiating than Obama. So they often say things that don't follow through on them. The European Central Bank was deliberate. I just did a column on this about how the ECB will rise above its own policy views and its own statute and end up bailing folks out, which they promptly decided to do, in fact, Monday. I'm sure because they read my column. But the European Central Bank was deliberately set up to be contrary to the U.S. model of the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve has a dual mandate to prevent serious inflation and to obtain full employment. And the European Central Bank, at the insistence of the Germans, had only one mandate, and that was to stop inflation. And they said, so we won't have any mandate to prevent economic recessions or make them easier, and we won't have any mandate to be the lender of last resort if banks get into trouble. So what happened? You've heard all the Sturm und Drang about the bailouts of Greece and Portugal and Ireland, and Germany kept on saying no, 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 and then said yes. Why? Because the leading beneficiaries of all of these bailouts have been German banks, who are insolvent or near insolvent, and the Germans have been playing pretend. So their stress tests very carefully have not taken into account the fact that they have all this sovereign debt that isn't worth anywhere near 100 cents on the dollar.
So this is the debt that they, the Greek debt, the Spanish debt, the Portuguese debt, the Irish debt, they're the biggest lender in all cases?
The German banks are the biggest single lenders in each of those nations that should have been on the hook. Look at Ireland. Ireland was running a budgetary surplus for most of the time. What went wrong? Well, the big three, actually the big four banks there were massive, what we call accounting control frauds. They grew at about 30%, 35% in some cases a year, and they were insolvent to the tune of about 60 cents on the dollar. In other words, if they made $100 in loans, they only got $40 back. $100 in loans, they got $40 of value. Massively insolvent. But the Irish killed effective bank regulation, which was done pretty much everywhere in the Western world. And so they didn't know how bad things were. And so the Irish government, the predecessor government, gave a blanket guarantee of all the debts of the Irish banks and made it a debt of the Irish government, which had no capacity to repay. And again, it doesn't have its own currency because it's a member of the euro. And that transformed a bank crisis into a budgetary crisis and into a currency crisis and into a debt cost crisis. Because the one thing that's left is Ireland has to borrow, you know, on a basis of its own credit. And that proved to be catastrophic. The CIA, of all places, in its World Book, describes the Irish austerity program as draconian. And boy, the CIA knows draconian.
And I think that probably the Greek situation is even worse.
Yes. Now, the Greeks have bona fide problems that they help generate.
Right, because they don't pay taxes, of course.
You're right. Now, all these nations aren't the same, but they are all in crisis. And so the response, there's only one playbook in Europe, and that is the International Monetary Fund austerity playbook, which always makes things worse. Well, there was a great article in Reuters that said, despite austerity, Greece's unemployment rate increased and its deficit increased. Well, yes, you adopt pro-cyclical policies. Again, right. That means you make the recession worse.
Well, by the way, Cameron in the United Kingdom, who has 16 multimillionaires in his cabinet, he's doing the same thing, creating austerity. And
yes.
now the young Brits are out on the street protesting. But just to close up here, because I want to go back to the central takeaway from our interview, which is that the German banks are insolvent. And explained how this economy of Germany, which is the most successful export economy in the world, is in fact in dire trouble. If all their major banks are insolvent, so how can they pull off this sleight of hand?
Well, first, it's a very wealthy nation. They can bail out their banks. probably not all of the banks are insolvent, but several of the Landesbank have already been bailed out twice, and some of them three times in recent eras. And of course, every one of these votes bails them out more. So the answer is Germany is a rich economy. It can afford to bail out its banks. It will be very expensive. But Germany is successful as an exporter because it's done a very successful war on working class wages. So real wages in Germany for the working class have been going down for a decade. And that is leading to Ireland saying, and indeed the EU is, and the ECB tell Ireland, part of your austerity has to be to slash working class wages. And so the Irish are trying to outcompete the Portuguese, but of course the Portuguese respond by trying to outcompete the Irish, and we call this the road to Bangladesh.
Right, the race to the bottom.
Yep.
So that's happening all across the Eurozone, not that it's not happening here, by the way, in the United States. So this is the face of global capitalism, right? The bankers make irresponsible loans to irresponsible...
they make fraudulent loans.
Right, to irresponsible borrowers like the former Greek government. And none of them get punished. The governments get booted out. The irresponsible lenders get bailed out. And the people get screwed. Is that...
Yes.
That's the
way
it
works. You get a financial crisis. The financial crisis causes a great recession, which causes a budgetary crisis because of the way the euro works. And all of this means that in the periphery in crisis, every government will fall. Most of them have already fallen. Spain will fall as well. And eventually, you're already seeing this in some of the elections, like in Finland, you get either ultra-extreme right or left-wing parties who then have veto, sort of like the Tea Party in the Republican in the United States, and they produce the most extreme and disastrous political policies. So you can look for increasing political and social instability. And, of course, what we haven't mentioned but is true throughout the West, massive increases in income inequality, and those reinforce political inequality.
And lead to political violence.
And lead to what Citicorp, in memos to its wealthiest clients, led them to say that the United States have become a plutocracy. In other words, a government of the wealthy, for the wealthy. In fact, for the extreme wealthy, the 0.1% at the top.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, William K. Black.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with William K. Black, who is a former litigation director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board. Currently, he's professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He's the author of the best-selling book, The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Cities of Europe I've burned before, and I might yet burn again. And if I do, I hope you understand that Washington will burn with them. Omaha will burn with them. Los Alamos will burn with them.